This week, obviously, is one of the most fundamental parshios in all the Torah because it has the Aseres Hadibros, which, as we spoke about on Tuesday, is something that is so central and so essential to everything, not to the exclusion of anything else. However, we do need to focus on the first of the Aseres Hadibros, which is Anochi Hashem Elokecha. We have a understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved, that he is the Borei U'Manhig L'chol HaBruim. What does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say in the Animamans, is the one who created the world, and he is the Manhig HaOlam? What is the difference between a creator and a Manhig? The answer is that when he created the world, we don't assume that he just created it and then everything stopped. It's he created, and then he continues to be involved on an ongoing basis. A Manhig is one who continues to lead, who continues to guide. And that is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to all of us in our lives. This is what we say in the Prakim of Tehillim that we add into Pesukei Dezimra on Shabbos. Mishamayim hibit Hashem. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks down onto the world. Ra'a es kol b'nei ha'adam. He sees what's going on an ongoing basis. Hayotzer yachad libam ha'meibin al kol ma'aseim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created all of us, and he continues to understand what it is that we're going through, what it is that we're experiencing, because our relationship with him is one that is not just because he created us, but rather because he continues to be our manhig, which is why Chazal tell us, Ein Adam Nokef Etzbo Milamata, Elim Kein Machrizin Alav Milamala. A person does not have the ability to do anything unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that this is the way it should be. So it's important that Amunah, which is so indispensable, which is so essential to everything that a Jew believes in, it's important that, especially on the week of the reading of the Aseres Hadibros, that we take the opportunity to think a little bit about this very important and very particular mitzvah that we are all confronted with. The truth is, we have a Gemara Masechet Shabbos. The Gemara says, La'achar me'eva esrim shana, after all of us are going to pass on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to call everyone in and have a very difficult conversation with each individual person. And what is that conversation going to consist of? So the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask a couple of questions. First question is, Nasata v'nasata be'emuna, which means, did you do business honestly? Were you honest in your dealings with other people? That's the first question. Were you a person who lived life with integrity, with virtue? Second question is, Kavata itim la Torah. Did you set aside time to learn Torah every day? Third question is, and notice it says, Asakta b'piria v'rivya. Asakta means, were you osek, means, did you try to bring children into the world? Now, unfortunately, it's not always up to a person whether or not they're going to be able to be successful in bringing children into the world. Not everybody has the ability to have children. Not everybody gets married. Not everybody's spouse is able to bring children, whatever it is. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks, Asakta b'piri v'rivya. The question is not, did you bring children into the world, but rather, did you try to bring children into the world? See, peace of the Yeshua. Did you look forward to a geula? Anyway, a whole list of questions that the Gemara describes are going to be asked, are going to be posed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to every individual person. And one of the Lubavitcher Rebbes said that perhaps when the Gemara starts off by saying the first question HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks is Nasata v'nasata be'amuna, maybe it means, did you engage? Nasata v'nasata means, did you have a masa umata? Did you engage, did you immerse yourself in the sugya of amuna? In the whole idea of emunah, did you try to understand it to the best of your ability? Were you on a search for growth, for development, for understanding what the relationship is all about throughout the different experiences of your life? They tell a story about a great magid who once went to give a shir somewhere, and he was giving a very, very inspiring talk. And after inspiring the whole community, somebody came over to him and he said, you know, I really, really was so transformed by your talk and I'm so moved by everything you said. I just have one question. There's one word I couldn't understand as you were talking. And he says, what is it? He says, you kept saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is that? So he turns back to him and he says, well, then obviously you didn't understand anything, because that was the whole talk. That is the essence of everything. And I often think about that story because I feel, you know, for those who are blessed to go to a yeshiva day school and then maybe to learn in seminary, and you're privileged to be here and to learn Torah, you know, it's so important. We can be focusing and emphasizing so many different aspects of what it means to live a Torah life. And we can talk about sitting in a sukkah and shaking the lulav and blowing the shofar and reading the Megillah and celebrating the Yom Tovim and observing Shabbos and doing everything that a good Jew is supposed to do. And yet, we can go through an entire life experience of Torah and mitzvos and never once turn around and think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's amazing. It's amazing. But I think it's not emphasized enough. What is the reason why we're shaking lulav? What is the reason why we're observing Shabbos? What is the reason why we do everything we do? It's all because we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if that doesn't happen, then what exactly are we doing? What is the purpose of everything that we're trying to aspire toward? It's only because we have that fundamental idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is an entity that we want to have a relationship with, that we want to come to a better understanding of. If that doesn't happen, then what exactly is the point of our existence? There's a Gemara Maseches Erevin where the Gemara says, "Hai alma kibehi lula damya." This world is considered like a wedding. So what does it mean? In what way is the world considered like a wedding? So this is a discussion in the different commentaries, exactly how to understand what it means that this world is like a wedding. The Rishonim write in Maseches Erevin that perhaps what it means is as follows. You ever been involved in planning a wedding? Your siblings, your cousins, whatever it may be, you're involved in planning a wedding. And it's so much preparation and so much detail goes into it. And hours of time and so many sleepless nights, and we have to meet with the caterer and we have to set up this and we have to talk to the band and the singer and what are they going to do here and the florist and everything. So many details, so much time, and how are we going to put everyone, where they're going to sit, and how are we going to send out the invitations, and how are we going to make sure all the response cards come in. So much. And after all of that, how long does the whole celebration last? Limited period of time. It's not so long. So the Rishonim say, that's what it means. You have people who spend their whole lives planning for this, for my retirement, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Everything's a plan for the future. Meanwhile, how long does your whole life last? It's not so long. So make sure you take advantage before the time runs out. That's the first interpretation that the Rishonim give. It's interesting, Rav Asher Weiss called me on the day that I accepted the position in the Young Israel of Woodmere. And he called me and told me a very interesting comment. He said, you know, the Gemara says that this world is considered like a wedding in some way. So in what way? So he said, have you ever been to a Hasidisha wedding before? Anyone here ever been to a Hasidisha wedding? So what happens at a Hasidisha wedding?
A lot.
A lot. A lot happens. A lot happens at every wedding. So what's unique about a Hasidisha wedding is, you know, let's say 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the family comes and they start with their pictures and everyone's getting dressed and their makeup done or whatever it is. Then, as the evening goes on, 7 o'clock, the close friends come for a Kabbalah Sponim. 8 o'clock is the chuppah and it's packed with all the friends and the guests and the neighbors. And then we have the dancing. Then Simchas Chasam Kala, all the yeshiva guys and the seminary friends, everyone comes and dances, has a great time. Then, after all that is over, what do? Mitzvah Tanz. Mitzvah Tanz goes till 3 o'clock in the morning. So who's there at 3 o'clock in the morning? Who's sticking around? The friends aren't staying. The neighbors aren't staying. The only ones who are there at 3 o'clock in the morning are the closest family. Everyone else left. What he said to me was, the Gemara says, "Hai alma kibei luda damya." Don't ever forget that at 3 o'clock in the morning, the only people who are going to be there for you are your family. And don't get lost in a high-powered position. Don't get lost in the fact that you have so many people that you're dealing with, that you have so many obligations that you need to be a part of. Don't ever, ever, ever neglect your family. Because in the end of the day, at 3 o'clock in the morning, the only person who's going to be there for you is your family. That's an amazing insight. But finally, the Baal Shem Tov, one of the Talmidei Baal Shem Tov, has an amazing insight where he says, what does it mean, Hai alma kibei lula damya, that this world is like a wedding? He explains, perhaps what it's a reference to is, you go to a wedding. Any of you ever been to a wedding hall that's like a destination wedding or something you're not used to, something you've never been to before? During COVID, we had a lot of these new locations, new venues, and it's so fascinating, it's so interesting. And you walk in and you're looking around and you see a beautiful symphony orchestra and you see all the flower arrangements and you see everything that's going on here, and it's so wonderful and it's so uplifting and so meaningful. And yet you come to the chuppah and everyone's sitting there and they're so excited. And as it comes the moment for the chassan and kala to finally get married, which is the most important moment of the evening, right, when the chassan turns to the kala and says, "Arei mekudeshes li," imagine the Nesat HaKedushin turns to him and says, "Okay, you have a ring?" He says, "Yes." "Okay, would you like to put it on the kala's finger?" I always say, when I'm a Nesat HaKedushin, the chassan looks at me and says, "Harei mekudeshes." I'm like, "I'm not marrying you." You should turn to the kala and say, "Harei at mekudeshes." You're marrying each other. So imagine the Masada Kedushin turns to the boy and says, you know, let's do this, Hariyat Mekudeshes. And he says, you know, I don't know, I'm just not so sure. Not so sure. Suddenly, the whole experience becomes very awkward. So I was at a wedding. I was under the chuppah. Chassan says, Hariyat Mekudeshes li, turns to the kala, thought he put the ring on her finger. It was actually a COVID wedding, so it was outside in New Rochelle in someone's backyard. It was a beautiful backyard, humongous, but no lights. And the ring bounced off of her finger, fell off of her gown, and rolled off somewhere into the woods. So here we are under the chuppah. I'm the only one under the age of 60 standing there. So I bent down with my phone. I'm like looking for this ring. I can't find it. The Kala, the Chassan and Kala's mothers both took off their shoes and socks. They said, if you walk around barefoot, you feel jewelry. You ever knew that trick? Good to know. Well, they didn't find it. And, you know, 5-6 minutes are going by. The Chassan thought it was funny. The Kala thought it was horrifying. And she's worried, is this a Simon Min HaShamayim? You know, something. She's whispering to me, what do I do? I didn't exactly know what to do. It was pretty horrible. And I was just nervous that she would have too much. And Baruch Hashem, they're happily married and they had a baby and everything's okay. But it was a very uncomfortable time. And all the guests are just sitting there like, what do we do? Suddenly becomes so awkward. Suddenly becomes so strange. I was just nervous that somebody would just be too anxious. So I went to one of the married women and I said, can we buy your ring off you? And we'll do this here, this way. Anyway, that's what happened at that wedding. But it reminded me of this idea of the Baal Shem Tov, where he talks about this wedding. I was actually once mentioning the story in a shiur that I gave. Anyone here from West Hempstead? So Rabbi Kelemer, Alav HaShalom. I don't know if he davened in the shul or not, but everybody knew Rabbi Kelemer. So I was once telling the story, and he was in the audience, and he came over to me afterward, and he said, you know, stick around long enough in the Rabbanus, you'll hear everything. So I said, what do you mean? He said, I was at a wedding recently, and it was in a shul. And he said, the Chassan and Kala were both Baalei Tshuva, and they had a lot of friends from university who weren't Jewish. They invited them to the wedding because they had just recently become Baalei Tshuva. Anyway, so there was a 6'7" man. You were at this wedding?
No.
No. There was a man. You heard me say it somewhere else? No. You just think it's funny. You don't even know what I'm about to say. So there was a guy who was at the wedding who was an Italian, an Irish, whatever it was, and he was 6'7", a humongous guy, and he was really excited that there was what to drink at the chassan's tish. He'd never been to a wedding like this before. So he's drinking and drinking a lot more, and then comes to the chuppah, and he, you know, walks into the room of the chuppah, and he's standing right next to one of the poles of the canopy, and he's like wobbling back and forth, and he couldn't control himself, and he collapses right in front of the whole audience. So what do? You call Hatzalah. So somebody calls a member of Hatzalah, they come in, they put him on a stretcher, they take him out, you know, they're going to work on him. And the Kala notices what's going on. I mean, everybody noticed. Everything stopped. And the Kala says, hey, where are you taking him? So they said, we're going to take him to the hospital. So she said, I'm not going to let my friend just go to the hospital by himself. And she walks off the chuppah and follows them into the ambulance. The Chassan says, hey, I'm not going to let the Kala just go to the hospital by herself. And he also leaves. And Rabbi Kelmer says, I'm just left there standing by myself. Like, what do I do now? Interesting story. So that becomes very awkward. And says the Baal Shem Tov, imagine if you have a situation like that where the Chassan just refuses to say Hariyat Mekudeshesli, nobody knows what to do. Suddenly everyone looks at each other and says, what are we doing here? What are we celebrating? What is there to celebrate? There's no celebration here at all. Says the Baal Shem Tov, that's what it means. Hai alma kibei lula damya, this world is like a wedding. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a beautiful world and he wants all of us to have experiences that are going to be meaningful and going to uplift us. He wants us to take advantage of everything that's out there. And it's wonderful. And enjoy life. And the symphony orchestra. And the floral arrangements. And everything else. It's great. All provided that at some point in your life, you turn around and say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hariyat Mekudeshesli. As long as you turn around and recognize what the point of all of this is. Why are we here? The whole celebration is meaningless if in the end of the day, we don't commit ourselves to the Ribono Shel Olam. But if we do that, then everything else that comes around with this experience is actually going to be uplifted and meaningful as well. And that, says the Baal Shem Tov, is what it means. And it's so important for us to have the opportunity to every so often think about our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think it's not spoken about enough. And that's why we have the opportunity here today. Says the Gemara Maseches Makos, Daf Chaf Gimel, Very fascinating Gemara. If you look here in number Aleph, where the Gemara tells us 613 mitzvahs is a very hard number to keep track of. How are you going to keep in mind how many mitzvahs there are and which classifications, which categories? Says the Gemara, is there any way to streamline, to simplify, and categorize all of the mitzvahs into smaller categories in order that it should be easier for us to handle? Says the Gemara, Sheish meos u'shlosha esrei mitzvahs nemar lo l'Moshe. Of course, Moshe Rabbeinu was taught 613 mitzvahs. The problem is, for those of us who have ADD, who don't have the ability to focus as much as Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't keep track of 613 mitzvahs. So what do I do? Says the Gemara, Ba David v'hamidon alachas esrei. David HaMelech comes along and he says, you know, you can really boil down, when you think about it, the entirety of Torah, 613 mitzvahs, can really be boiled down to 11 main categories, 11 main themes and principles that really encompass everything. Okay. Ba Yeshaya v'hamidon al sheish. Yeshaya HaNavi came along a little bit later and he says, you know, we don't need to have 11 categories, 6 categories would also be good. Ba Micha v'hamidon al shalosh. The Navi Micha came along and said, there are really 3. What is the 3? That Micha highlights, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want of us? What is the essence of life? What's the tafkid? Says the Navi, Kiyam Asos Mishpat, number 1, Ve'avas Chesed, number 2, Ve'atznei Alecha Simelokecha. Now, number 1, the Navi is not talking to women. The Navi is talking to every Jew. And what the Navi is saying is, number 1, Asos Mishpat, you have to live a life of justice, a life that is honest, that is virtuous, and honest, that is upstanding. Secondly, he says, Avas Chesed, it's a pillar of what it means to be a Jew. And finally, Hatznei Alecha Simelokecha is a way of life for every Jew, for men and women, for children and adults. Everyone has an obligation to live a life of tznius. Ein lecha yafa min hatznius, says the Gemara, actually describing the story of Kabbalas HaTorah. That's what the Medrash says. Why is it that the Luchos Rishonos were destroyed? My father likes to say over from Rav Mordechai Gifter, who was the Rosh Hashiva in Helzer Yeshiva in Cleveland. So he was actually a relative of ours. His son, Binyamin Gifter, married my mother's sister. So my father and Rabbi Gifter were actually very friendly, very close. I shouldn't say friendly. He was much older than my father, but they were very close over the years when we spent a lot of time in family simchas together. So Rabbi Gifter once told my father the following idea. Why is it that by a wedding we break a glass under the chuppah? So most people say, Zecha l'churba. The Gemara actually writes that they had this practice of breaking a glass because people were too lightheaded and they were at weddings and they were doing things that were not appropriate. So one of the Amaram got up and smashed the glass to catch everyone's attention and say, you know, get a hold of yourselves and don't get carried away. So Rabbi Gifter suggested maybe the reason why is based on a medrash in this week's parasha. What does the medrash say? Why is it that the first luchos were smashed and then the second luchos lasted? What is the difference? It's the same thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the luchos and what went wrong? Says the medrash, because on the first occasion of giving the Luchos, it was with so much hype and so much fanfare. It was Bekolo Subrakim, and the whole world came to a standstill, and everything was stopping. And there was so much attention that was given to this experience of Kabbalah HaTorah, the Ayin Hara was sholeit. And says the Medrash, Ein Lecha Yafe Min Atznius. There's nothing greater than Tznius. As you see from the Luchos, the first Luchos did not last because it was a lack of Tznius in the way that they were transmitted. The second Luchos did. It was a much quieter affair. And what Rabbi Gifter suggested was, this is what we try to impress upon a couple as they're getting married. Don't forget, she'en lecha yafa min atznius. There's nothing better in the world that can actually be an opportunity to grow and to be able to have tremendous, meaningful life than to be a person who is a tzanua, to be a couple and to be a home and a family that lives on the values of tznius. And that perhaps is why we break the glass under the chuppah, to have a reminder of the broken luchos, of that experience that the Medrash describes, of why the luchos were destroyed and why they were not able to be something of everlasting nature. So says the Navi here, that is one of the 3 pillars of everything that Torah stands on. Yeshaya HaNavi came along and said, we can boil it down to 2, but finally, the Navi Chavakuk comes along and says the following. What is the foundational principle? What is the underlying primary principle of all of Torah, Shenemar, Tzadik be'emunaso yichye. If you believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you have emunah, then you understand what it means to be a Jew. And if you don't have that, then you're missing everything. Then you're missing everything. So the Mishnah Berurah writes in the Bir Halacha that we have sheish mitzvos tamidios. We have 6 constant mitzvos that we have to think about all the time.
The lashon that the Mishnah Berurah uses is afilu rega echad kol yama, which is a very, very difficult expectation. But it's something that the Mishnah Berurah writes, we have an expectation that we should think about this all the time. What are they? Number one, he says, lahamin shiyesh eloka echad ba'olam shehimsi kol hanimtzos. We have to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one, I forgot to put it on here, but if you want to look it up, it's the Bir Halacha in Simen Aleph, Seif Aleph in Shulchan Aruch, the very first one in Shulchan Aruch, where he says, what is the expectation of every Jew? Number one, he says, you have to believe that there is only one God in the world, Shehimtzi Kol HaNimtzos, that created all of us. It's all because HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that this is how it should be. Number two, he says, basically, lo yelacha alehim acher malpanai, shelo namin mishum Elohim zulasa. We're not allowed to believe in any other God other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number three, he says, liyachdo, yichud Hashem. Number four, leov hamakam baruch hu, to love and appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number five, to have yiras shamayim. And number six, shalom nasser achar machshavas halei v'ri'iyas einayim. That is what he says are the sheish mitzvot tmidios, ongoing mitzvot that we have an obligation to observe at all times and to think about every day of our lives. So it's important for us to have the opportunity to have these discussions, to have these thoughts, and to really try to remind ourselves every so often about how foundational, how fundamental it is for a Jew to understand what Emunah is all about. The challenge is that Emunah is very, very dynamic. Our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not always going to be the same. L'mashal, our relationship with our parents is not always the same. At different stages of our lives, we feel differently about what the relationship means, what the significance is. Sometimes we're angry. Does it mean we hate them? No. Sometimes we're uncomfortable. Sometimes we feel very much embraced and loved and supported, and sometimes we don't feel that way. And it's the same with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that relationship, the Amuna relationship, is one that is very dynamic, that is sometimes very complicated, and it's not at all a one-dimensional mitzvah. When we talk about shaking lulav, so you shake the lulav. It is what it is. When you talk about a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's very hard to put into terms exactly what that's supposed to feel like. So let's try to clarify just a couple of points that come up when we talk about the mitzvah of Amuna. Number one, is there a mitzvah of Emunah at all? That's the first question we need to ask ourselves. Is this even a mitzvah? So we look at the Rambam. The Rambam is found in the Sefer HaMitzvos, where the Rambam lists what, in his opinion, are the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. Other Rishonim disagree with the list that the Rambam curated. They don't all have the same opinion. But the Rambam writes that the first of all the mitzvahs of Torah is the following. Look here in number Gimel. Mitzvah Achas. What is the first mitzvah? He had Sivoi Asher tzivanu v'ha amanas ha'elokus. The first mitzvah that we have is to believe in God. V'hu shenamen shiyesham ila v'siba u'poel l'chala nimtzayim v'hi omro anochi Hashem elokecha. What does it mean when we say in the Aseres HaDibros anochi Hashem elokecha? You know what it means? It means we have to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, that He is the only reason why everything happens the way it does. That's the first mitzvah that the Rambam lists. Now, surprisingly, the Ramban points out that the Bahag, one of the Baal HaLachas Gedolos, was of the opinion that this is not a mitzvah. To believe in God is not a mitzvah. Now, how can that be? How can it be that believing in God is not a mitzvah? Why is it not counted among the 613? Is there anything in the world that can be more important than that? And the Ramban explains the position of the Bahag as follows. V'hanir midato shel Baal HaLachas. This is a number dalet. What is the position of the Baal HaLachas Gedolos? Why does he say that we don't count Emunah as a mitzvah in the number of 613, he explains, She'ein minyan taryag elagzeirosav yis'ale shagazar aleinu la'asos. The 613 is counting up all of the directions, all of the instructions that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us of how to live life. Aval ha'emuna b'mitziyasi yis'ale. This idea of emuna, to believe in God, shehodinu ba'osos umosem begalish chinamso einenu. When we talk about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself to us at Har Sinai, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to us at Kriyas Yamsuf, that we had a real revelation, hu ha'ikar v'hashoresh shemimenu noldu ha'mitzvos. It's so axiomatic to what it means to be a Jew. That's not a mitzvah. That's the foundation. If you don't have that, then there's nothing to talk about. A mitzvah means you have a whole list of things that you have to do. This is not something I have to do. This is either you get it or you don't. I'm not telling you what to do. If you don't understand that Emunah is the most foundational aspect of what it means to live a Jewish life, then you just don't get it, and nothing else is applicable. This is not one of the lists. And therefore, the Ramban says, that's why the Bahag is of the opinion Not that this is not important enough to be counted, but rather it's too important to be in the list. It's so axiomatic, it's so presupposed that every Jew needs to understand what Emunah really means. Now, if we assume that the Rambam is correct, or even like the Bahag, Emunah is certainly either a mitzvah, or it's something that's so foundational, it's so fundamental to who we are, whatever it is, there's a further disagreement. What exactly that's supposed to mean practically? Should we all be living a life with a basic, primitive understanding of God, what we refer to as Emunah Pshuta? Or do we assume that the right way to get into this mitzvah is to delve into the very difficult, complex, confusing reality of what it actually means to be a believer in God? You ever met a person who just has Emunah Pshuta? I marvel at those people. I marvel at those people. Now, I think people I've spoken to don't feel either way. They just don't think about things. So they don't have Emunah Pshuta, and they don't have Emunah the other way. They don't have anything. They just don't think. A lot of people don't think. But when you're talking about people who actually live life and are serious about it, you know, you ever met like a Holocaust survivor who remained committed to the faith after the Holocaust, and you ask yourself, how could it be? It's just so shocking. I've asked myself many times, would I have remained frum? Would I have wanted to identify as a Jew after the Holocaust? I don't know. I'm blessed that I wasn't given that challenge. But I think I would have failed. I think so. It's a very, very difficult question to think about. But if you've ever asked a survivor that question, like, how do you believe in God? And they look at you like you're crazy. What do you mean? Like, we have Emunah. And I'm like, my question is, why do you have Emunah? Or how do you have Emunah after everything you've been through? And again, they look back at you like you are crazy. What's the question? There's nothing to question. We have Emunah. That's Emunah Pshuta. It's not because they're so sophisticated. It's not because they're such major philosophers. It's not because they thought about it so deeply. Just this is what it is. I was raised in a home where this is what we believe in. So this is what I believe in. Did I delve into all the chakiras, all the questions of how could this be, how can that be? No. I just believe. Emunah Pshuta. Is that the preferred way of life for a Jew? Or do we assume that no, if you're intelligent enough to actually get into the questions and really gain a deeper understanding of what Emunah really stands for and really confront the issues that are out there, maybe that's the preferred way. This is actually a big discussion between the Rishonim. How do you understand what the mitzvah of Emunah actually is? Is it sufficient? Is it beneficial to live a life of Emunah Pshuta? Are things just simpler, and that's the preferred way? Or would you say no? The preferred way is to have an understanding of what it is that we're doing, of what it is that we believe in. So let's look. The Chovos HaLevavos writes, Rabbeinu Bechaya Ibn Pekuda, in the early 11th century, points out the following, where he says, in the Hakdama, in the introduction to his Sefer, here in number Hey, Kol mi sheyesh bekoach sichlo v'hakaroso, anyone who has the intellectual capacity or the competence, the ability, lamor abira mashakibel, to fully understand, to fully grasp what it is that you were taught when you were a child, ela sheha atzlus ikvaso mila'ayim besichlo. The only reason why I'm not getting into it, it's not because I'm not intelligent, it's because, I have other things to do. So I'm not focused on this area of my life. Levar achar ha'amunah, to spend time and to spend my thoughts clarifying and understanding what Emunah means to me, asid lihi anesh alkach, will be punished for that. So if you live life as Emunah Pshuta and you just say, this is good enough for me, I don't need to understand anything more, says the Chovos HaLevavos, that's not the preferred way. That's a very shallow existence. It means you don't really understand what your relationship with God is all about. And then he goes further in the third parak of the Chovos HaLevavos, and he writes, anyone who's able to get deeper into it, if I can use my intellect to get beneath the surface, to ask the difficult questions and to find the answers, which, by the way, I always think about it as follows. Rav Shimshon Pinkus has a mashal. I saw it many years ago and it really resonated with me. I don't remember which sefer it was in, but it's something that really gave a perspective to me. about what emuna actually means. So you think about it as follows. People think emuna means to believe. So what does it mean to be a person who believes? What does emuna mean? What does emuna actually mean? So he gives the following mashal. Says, imagine somebody comes over to you and says, you know, I really need some help. I need an investor. I'm trying to get a business off the ground, and I just don't have enough money in the bank right now, but, you know, it's going to be so successful, and this, that. So they ask you for $25,000 to invest in the business. Would you give it to them? No. Somebody comes over to you on the train and asks you for $25,000 to invest in a business? No, of course you don't give it to them. How about if it's your next door neighbor, your best friend, who you've known your whole life, whose children grew up in your house, your children grew up in their house, total transparency, you've been friends forever, they want to start a new business, and they ask you to help them. I need 5 years, $25,000, I'll pay it back to you over the course of 5 years. Would you give it to them? If you're in a position to give it and you have the money, of course you would. Fine, so you give the money and you write a contract to make sure that the person's going to be liable to pay you back. Come to shul the next day and somebody says, oh, I heard you invested $25,000 with this person in town. Yeah, of course I invested. So the person challenges you and says, how do you know you're going to be paid back? So what do you tell them? I don't know I'm going to be paid back, but I have a relationship with this person for 25 years. We've been best friends. My kids, their kids, he's in my house, I'm in their house. I assume they're going to pay me back. Yeah, but how do you know? The answer is, I don't know. I believe, based on the relationship that I have, that they're probably going to honor their word. I believe it. Is there any way to know with certainty? There's no way to know with certainty. It could be they'll go bankrupt, they'll file bankruptcy, and that'll be the end of my money. It's possible. Could be they'll move to Israel, and I'll never see them again, and that was it. And all this was just stealing my money. It's possible. It's possible. So I have to say, I believe that because of my relationship that I have, the person's going to pay me back. Imagine if I would say to you, I believe that there is a desk in front of me. Would that be the right way to say it? No. What would you say? I am certain. I know that there's a desk in front of me. If I say I believe that there's a floor beneath me, that would be a very strange way to express myself, because it's not that I believe there's a floor, it's I look down and I see that there's a floor. Otherwise, I would fall down. So that, says of Shimshon Pinkus, is what emunah means. Emunah does not mean something that I can ever know with certainty. That's called yediyah. That's called knowing something with certainty. Emunah l'ha'amin means, at some point, whatever journey you're up to in life, in your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're going to have to take a leap of faith and say, this is how far I've gotten in my understanding of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents, of what he means to me in my life. Beyond that, I don't know. Beyond that, I take a leap of faith. That's what the challenge of Emunah is all about. That's where it comes from. It's not simple, because there is no answer. If there was an answer, like the Sefer HaKuzari writes, he says, Ilu yadativ hayisiv. If I understood all the cheshbonos, all the calculations of how God runs the world, then I would apply for the job to be God myself. But I'm not. If I understood it, then I would be God. But I'm not. I'm a human being. Which means the mitzvah of emunah has to be that there are going to come a point in all of our lives, in all of our religious experience, when there's going to be something that we're going to confront that's going to be beyond our level of understanding. And that's where emunah kicks in. That's exactly what emunah means. Says the Chovos HaLevavos, it's the job of every Jew to delve into it as much as they can. It doesn't mean you're always going to have the answers. It means at some point, you're going to have to make the leap of faith. But you have to keep pushing yourself to get to that point of the deepest level of understanding you possibly can get to. That is the mitzvah of believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Chovos HaLevavos, we say in the Pasuk, V'yadata hayom v'hashivosa el levavecha. What does it mean, V'yadata hayom? It doesn't mean you should just be aware, be'emunah pshuta, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is an entity in my life. No! Yediyah means to have a real understanding. What does it mean? I think the Baal HaTanya writes this in one place. What does it mean, Yediyas Hashem? Lashon Chibur. What's Chibur? Why is it Chibur?
Connection.
Why? Why? Because the Baal HaTanya says, where's the first place in Chumash where it says Yediyah? Vayeda adam eschava ishto. Adam and Chava were intimate with each other. They got to know each other on a very close level. They really came to an understanding of one another. That's what it means, Yidias Hashem. V'yadata hayom v'hashivosa el vavecha. Says the Chavos HaLevavos, it means there's an expectation that we're all going to work as hard as we can throughout the experience of life to try to come to the deepest understanding that we can come to of the essence of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Alternatively, you have the position of the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch was about 300 years after the Chavos HaLevavos, and he and many others disagreed with the approach of the Chavos HaLevavos. And he says, Chalila nanu v'chalila, lavo achar hamelech begaveinu. Are you saying that we should try with our intellect to come to an understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Says the Sefer HaChinuch, Avoseinu sidru shulchan lefaneinu. Our forefathers and all those who came before us set up the religion the way it is. Set up our level of understanding the way we know it. And they got into it as deep as they could. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, do you think that it's your job to start digging beneath the surface and coming to new understandings? What your parents taught you, what your school taught you, whatever you know about Emunah is good enough. And if there's nothing that bothers you, leave it at that. Why get involved in all the questions that are going to end up making you more confused? There's not going to be an answer to your questions in the end of the day. Everyone's going to get to a point where they say, I don't understand. Now, where is that point for everybody? I don't know. Some people say, they look at the Holocaust and say, that's my point where I say, I just can't get beyond it. I don't understand. Where is God? How can it be? Everybody has an aspect of life where they say, this doesn't add up to me. This doesn't make any sense. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, you want to go down that rabbit hole? Does that make sense? If there's nothing that bothers you, and Emunah Pshuta seems to be working, and you're a fine, functioning, happy Jew, then leave it at that. Why get involved in anything deeper that's going to end up making you more problems because of the questions that you have? That is the opinion of the Chavos HaLevavos. And the truth is, the B'nai Yisachar, who's very well known for his Hasidish Svarim, but he also wrote a sefer in Halacha called the Derech Pikudecha, which is a sefer on the Mitzvah HaTorah. And there he writes that it's much better for a person to spend their time learning Torah than to spend their time trying to be Doresh V'choker Emunasa Yisbarach, to try to understand the underworld and the underpinnings of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things and why he does it the way he does. And he says, you look in the Rishonim and you see the Sefer Mor Nevuchim and you see a number of other Svarim that the Rishonim wrote to try to get into the understandings of why things are the way they are. Chavos HaLevavos, why? He says that's because they were dealing with people who were intellectuals in their community who were challenging them. So they had to write a response. They had to really delve into the issues to give a formulated answer to the questions that were being posed. But if you're blessed to be a person who doesn't have these questions, then leave it as it is. And there's no reason to make life confusing for yourself. So that is the two very different approaches that the Rishonim have when we come to the mitzvah of Emunah. In general, the Torah has so many different components, but the Chavos HaLevavos breaks it all down into two general categories. And he doesn't say that the two categories are a mitzvah saseh and mitzvah lo saseh, but rather he gives it into two other categories which are very important to this discussion. Let's see what he says. Chavos HaLevavos writes, if you look here on the bottom of the page, number above, Ach chachmas, this is in the introduction to the Sefer, Ach chachmas ha-Torah mischalakes lebeis chalakim. The Torah, in its infinite wisdom, is broken down into two different components. Ha-echad mehem, one obligation that I have, as far as the Torah is concerned, is la-da'as chovas ha-evarim. I have to know what God expects me to do with my body. So that means to shake lulav, to sit in sukkah, means to blow the shofar, to hear the shofar, to daven with my mouth, to run to do a mitzvah, all kinds of different things that are chovas ha'ivarim. How am I supposed to use my language? Not speaking lashon hara, not violating rechilos, making sure that I speak divrei Torah, making sure that I do things in a way with my evarim that is productive. Vahasheni, and the second one, is something that is not as discernible, that is not as obvious. This is something that's a little bit more obscure. Ladas chovas halavavos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be in touch with our lev. Vehem hamatzpunim. Vehi hachachma hatzpuna. Ve'enonu tzrichem levar ezeh b'mitzvah sa'evarim. Lefi shem yeduas lakol. Says the Chovos HaLevavos, you want to know how to use your evarim? Look in the Shulchan Aruch. Look in the Gemara. It will tell you exactly what to do. You don't need me to tell you that. writes the Chovas Alavavas, why did I write the Sefer? It's because we have the second obligation. The second obligation is to live a life of understanding, of passion, of feeling. And that's not spoken about in the pages of Chumash. And that you won't find in the Shulchan Aruch. How's a person supposed to feel in their relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What am I supposed to be thinking about? How is the Avoda Hatzfuna? There's the revealed Avoda, which is what I do with my body. And then there's what goes on inside of my heart. And he writes that this is so important for us to really appreciate both of those. Look at the next paragraph on the second side. HaKadosh gave us a guf, a body, as well as a neshama. In fact, when we say the Asher Yatzar every day, so we say, Rofei chal basar mafli la'asos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a body, mafli means pilei ploy. It's absolutely amazing. So the Rishonim asks, what's so amazing about the body? What are we referring to when we say our body is a pella? What's the pella? So some say, I think the Tur quotes it from some Rishonim, the answer is very simple. The pella of our body is, if you blow up a balloon and you make a hole in the balloon, all the air goes out. So isn't it a pella that we all have bodies and there are a number of holes in our bodies? We have eyes and we have ears and we have a nose and somehow everything from inside doesn't come out. I know it's gross to think about it, but it's amazing. Why don't all the internal organs come out from the openings of our body? That is the pella. That we are a balloon that should pop because we have so many spaces where things can come out from, and yet the body knows that everything's supposed to stay in its place. That's the pella. But the Rama says, perhaps the pella that we describe in talking about our body is the fact that a guf and a neshama, which are so opposite from one another, figure out how to have some kind of synergic relationship with each other. Somehow they figure out how to get along, even though they want very different things from life. They're pushing in two different directions, and yet somehow they are able to join together to create a meaningful life as one. That is the pella. Mafli la'asos, that is the pella. That at every stage of life, I have the ability to have both aspects of my personality coming together and not destroying each other. That's a pella. And that's what it means. Says the Chovas HaLevavos, Anachnu chayavin lavod oso ba'avur zeh, in response to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in this pella-dika way of having an neshama and a guf, in response to that, we also have two different ways of serving Him. One is avoda gluya. One is that we're supposed to serve Him outwardly, which is to highlight the fact that we all have an outward physical appearance, and mitzvos that are supposed to celebrate the fact that we have a guf, that we have a body. And we also have avoda hatzfuna. We also have the hidden avoda, which is to celebrate the fact that we have an inside neshama, that we have something that is tzafun, something that is hidden. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us another category of mitzvos, which is avas Hashem, yiras Hashem, things that we think about, things that we feel, and that, he says, is really what the consummate life of a Jew is supposed to be. Both of those components coming together and serving our Kadosh Baruch Hu in that way. I see that people are antsy to get out for Shabbos, which I will not hold you up for. But when we talk about often, what exactly does it mean when we daven for a geula? We ask so many times during our tefillah that we want a geula. As Tzemach David Avdecha v'li Yerushalayim Ircha, the Ramchal writes in one of his Ma'amarim, the Ramchal was one of the great Italian Jewish philosophers in the 1700s. How long do you think the Ramchal lived? Right? Everybody heard of the Ramchal, Mesilas Yesharim. When did he die? What? How young? 39. The Ramchal, 39. How old was the Shach? Shach is the most important commentary on Shulchan Aruch Yeruah Deya. 40. Shalah Kaddish. Also, amazing. It's amazing to see what people can accomplish. It's depressing when you just turned 37 and you're almost there. And you haven't done anything. So yes, make sure, don't make the mistakes I make. So, the Ramchal writes in one of his Ma'amarim that when you think about what exactly is the tragedy of Galus. So think about the United States.
We're not talking about a galus like in Russia or the oppression that they had in Europe. We're in the United States. We have religious freedoms. Yes, anti-Semitism is on the rise and there are things going on. Let's rewind the clock 10 years. It was like the greatest reality of Jewish history that ever existed, I think. Think about that. I think the last 50 years of Jewish history here in the United States could possibly be, I'm not such a historian, but when you think about it, it can possibly be the greatest years of Jewish history ever in the history of Galus. We've never had it so good. Religious freedoms, we built our own institutions, we have our own schools, there's no oppression at all. Like, everything's great. Jews are working in all the professions, making a lot of money, being very successful, supporting their families, raising children. Everything's great. Everything's amazing. So why do we want a geula? Who wants to end this reality? It's great. What's the problem with galus? The problem with galus that Ramchal challenges us to think about is not that in galus we are made to suffer, because that's not always the case. There are plenty of times in Jewish history when they found themselves in a country, they were treated very respectfully, everything was going very well, and it's not that they were being tortured, and it's not that they were being destroyed by the enemy, like we're experiencing today. So what's the problem in galus? Says the Ramchal, the problem with galus is, like the Navi says in Eicha, I believe, b'machshakim hoshivani. When we're in galus, we are living a life of choshech. We are living a life without perspective. Because we don't have the total relationship and understanding of the integration of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. And as a result of that, severely damaging aspect of galus, as a result of that, there's a tremendous sense of disorientation. There's a tremendous sense of confusion in the Jewish community. That, says the Ramchal, is why we need a geula. Because we don't have that close connection and understanding with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what it means to be in a real relationship with Him, that's what we're missing. The Dubna Magid, we'll close with this. Dubna Magid has a beautiful mashal where he says there was a child went to a wedding for the first time in his life and he's so excited and he really doesn't know what to expect. So he comes there and he's all dressed up. He walks into the room where they're having the chuppah and he looks and he sees at the front of the aisle there's a young man, a young woman standing there under a canopy with a long aisle down the middle. Walks straight down the aisle, taps the young man on the shoulder and he says, "You know, there are a lot of people in the room here. But for some reason, it seems you're much happier than everybody else. I'm just curious, why? What are you so happy about?" And the young man turns to this child and he says, "What am I happy about? I'm the chassan, I'm getting married." So the kid says, "You know, I don't really know what that means. Maybe you can tell me, what does it mean that you're the chassan and you're getting married? Like, why is that a reason to be happy?" He says, "Oh, you don't get it? I'm the chassan, I'm getting married, and like, look at the tuxedo I'm wearing. I've never felt so good in my life. Look at this new pair of shoes. It's like so expensive. I never bought a pair of shoes like this. And these cufflinks, pure gold cufflinks, amazing." Okay. Turns to the young lady standing next to him and he says, "You know, I noticed there are lots of women in the room, but for some reason you just look so much more excited than everybody else. Can you tell me why? What are you so happy about?" And she says, "Well, I'm the kala. I'm getting married. What's not to be happy?" So he says, "What does it mean to be a kala and to get married?" She says, "Do you know that I've been here since 3 o'clock in the morning? And I came here to get my makeup done and my hair. And my gown was custom made. I'm working on this for the last 6 months and all the fittings. And this jewelry, I'm telling you, like, I feel like a princess. It's like amazing. What can be bad?" Ask yourself, how long is that marriage going to last? If at the moment of their most exciting commitment to each other, all they're focusing on is the jewelry and the gown and the shoes and the tuxedo and the everything else, which is wonderful. But if that's all your focus is on, you have no understanding of what the gravity of this moment actually is. The reason to be excited is because I'm about to commit myself for the rest of my life to have this person who I'm going to love, who's going to love me, who we're going to build a whole life with. That's the reason to be excited. Says the Dubna Magid, that's what it means when we talk about a geula. You ask people, "Why do you want a geula?" They say,
Nebuch, there's so many tragedies in the world. We need a geula.
Yeah, what's going to happen when we have a geula? Anybody here in medical school? Planning to go to medical school? No? You do plan? Nobody plans to go to med school? Okay. Anybody plan to be a social worker? Psychologist, therapist, right? So what are you going to do when Mashiach comes? Just curious. You plan to be a therapist? You plan to be a therapist? Okay. What are you going to do when Mashiach comes? Everything in the world's going to be perfect, right? So who are you going to deal with? You're going to be out of a job. What? It's worth it to have Mashiach and you'll be on the streets without a job? Exactly, right? But people say, I'm trying to get you to think about it. People say, whenever they hear about a tragedy, oh, we need Mashiach. Yeah, what's going to happen when Mashiach comes? I don't know. The Rambam says, we don't know what Mashiach's going to feel like or look like or experience until he gets here. Then we'll figure it out. Okay. So, some people think, no one's ever going to have to work again. When Mashiach comes, money's going to be falling from the trees and like everything's just perfect, you know? Amazing. Utopian society. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not true. I don't know. But is that why we want Mashiach? All of those ancillary issues that may come along with Mashiach's arrival might be true. They may or may not be true, but that's not why we want Mashiach. We want Mashiach, like the Navi says, Sos asiz b'Hashem tagel nafshi b'elokai. Because so long as we are in exile, so long as we're in galus b'machshak emoshivani, we don't have an understanding of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not something real to us. It's not something that's tangible. It's not something we can fully appreciate. And once Mashiach will come and God will once again reveal himself and allow us to have that sense of understanding and appreciation for what this relationship is all about, then we're going to be able to live a life of perspective, a life of real meaning. Is it true that maybe all the other things are going to come along with it? Maybe. I don't know. Is it true that a chasan and kala, she wears a gown and jewelry and he wears his tuxedo and they have really beautiful food and they have a band? Yes. But that's not the essence of what it is. Those are the side parts of the major celebration. That's why, as much as we try to understand what Amuna is supposed to mean for all of us, and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's place in all of our lives is really about, we have to realize that there's something that's so lacking in the essence of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu so long as we find ourselves in Golus. And that is what we daven for incessantly so many times a day, to have the opportunity to once again experience that opportunity of being in a real, close, deep, intimate relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and once again, regaining perspective of what that kind of life can be, what that can look like. What does a life of meaning and purpose at every moment of life actually feel like? Not just on the off chance that once in a blue moon I'm going to think about God, but know that He permeates, that He dominates every single aspect of my life. That's something that's lacking. And that's what we daven for. That's what we look forward to. So as we say in this week's parsha, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, it's an opportunity to remind ourselves of this most fundamental mitzvah, that all of us have an opportunity to observe to the best of our ability, but to realize that there's so much lacking in as much as we can understand and as much as we can appreciate. We look forward to so much more when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring us to that time when He will reveal Himself again. Okay.